Good morning. Everyone is rested, ready for another day of activities here. It's a pleasure to see you all and some new faces too that have arrived. This particular course has been called Remembering the Bob for the bicentennial of his birth. And the idea behind it is for us to review some of the basic teachings in the faith about the Bob and aspects of his prophetic career as a refresher. Now, of course, there may be some things here that are new for people, but at the same time, some of it will be quite familiar to you. This is mostly what I've collected here for these sessions is from the writings of The Guardian. This terrific overview, the capacity of the overview, and the fact that he has also edited completely the Dawnbreakers represents an immense, incalculable contribution to the understanding of the cause. I don't know how, without the eye of the Guardian, without the focus of God Passes By, how we would ever understand the faith. We wouldn't know which part to take a hold of. We wouldn't know what were the peaks and what were the valleys in the development of both the Bob's dispensation and then joined along with Baha'u'llah's dispensation. You'll find some interesting contradictory definitions of the dispensation of the Bob in the writings of the Guardian. Sometimes the dispensation of the Bob is the ministry of the Bob. It finishes with Baha'u'llah making his receiving the intimation of his mission and the Sijjal, that finishes it. In another case, this goes on until the Baha'u'llah declares his mission in Baghdad. So that becomes a 20-year period there. And in another letter, Shoghi Effendi writes, he says that in another sense, the dispensation of the Bab lasts as long as Baha'u'llah's dispensation. The two are so blended together that when the Guardian introduces his letter, the dispensation of Baha'u'llah, 90th anniversary, that is from 1844 until 1934. He says, this is the 90th anniversary of the birth of the faith of Baha'u'llah. Doesn't say of the declaration of the Bab, because it encompasses, the faith encompasses the Bab's dispensation as well. And the combination of the two, Shoghi Effendi has coined a unique phrase for that. He calls it the Baha'i Era. The Baha'i Era means this combination of these two dispensations. It will last no less than 1,000 years. Then we see, if we look a little deeper, we see in the tablets of Abdu'l-Baha, he said that Baha'u'llah has said no less than 1,000 years, but he said it may well be 2,000 years. It may well be 5,000 years. In tablets still, it may be 10,000 years. And in talks in Egypt, he says 15,000 years. This is the mother dispensation of 500,000 years. It's got to produce something. So it may take longer if we don't get busy and use up its energies and draw on its confirmations. But something will develop for sure. But it's going to be a challenge to the people after 1,000 years. There'll be a number of people, no doubt, will decide they're prophets of God and announce themselves, and that'll have to be all straightened out. We're coming to the consummation, you know. With this dispensation, the world comes of age. And all this unification, which began with family unities and tribal unities, city-state unities, national unities, and now international unity, this is the culmination of the social evolution of mankind on this planet thus far, which is still, if we look at it very carefully, is still rather primitive. I mean, the mankind is not very far advanced. I remember the hand of the cause, Mr. Inigo Lingo. I had the bounty of traveling well in South America for 3 months, translating his talks and also hearing over meals and things intimacies, connections, his discussions with Shoghi Effendi when he was on pilgrimage. And he said, Shoghi Effendi, one day he said to me, you know, Abdu'l-Bahá several times mentioned that this planet is the hell of the planets. It is the most backward of all of the planets. And then Shoghi Effendi added his own description, the tail of the dog. Now that's where we are. And we all look startled because we say, but Baha'u'llah says this is the day of God. Yeah? Yes, it's the day of God. Religious truth is relative, not absolute. This is the day of God for this planet. And it's a wonderful revelation, and it's going to cause a transformation. But we're pretty far behind other similar planets. Even, he said, nearby planets. So the next stage that we have to do is to expect some kind of connection with these other worlds. That would be a new stage and would require new revelations and so on. Mr. Linga said, I must have looked a little startled because the Guardian riveted me. He said, they still make war. Did you need some proof of that we're the most backward of all planets, that it's a hell? The human beings that have been created by God to live together in harmony, and he's provided everything necessary on the planet that we can organize ourselves and live harmoniously and with prosperity, we devise methods of how to murder each other and go at it. You don't want to count the number of dead from the last century from actions of man, or even this century. Somebody was just mentioning probably there from the beginning of this century till now, of what we have recorded, there's about 20 million abortions of children. I hate to say, but Abdu'l-Bahá said it's tantamount to murder. That's apart from the medical needs and requirements of mothers and things that have been defined in the faith, but it's really, things are happening around us that are not pleasant at all, as you quite aware. So now we come to how does the dawn of this new revelation, how can we characterize the mission of the Bab with our friends and acquaintances in our commemoration of the bicentennial of his birth? What can we say? And yesterday I was posing the question that if somebody asks us, tell me about the Bab. What's the first thing that comes in your mind when you think, how am I going to answer this question? And I was suggesting that some of us are accustomed to the answer that he's like kind of like the John the Baptist before the coming of Jesus, which in some senses is correct. John the Baptist was the announcer of the coming of the Christ. We in Christianity, of course, we don't give him the station of a prophet, but in the Quran, he is a prophet of God. And he has his own laws and his own teachings. And Christ accepted and confirmed one when he accepted baptism. Baptism was an institution of John the Baptist. But the difference between John the Baptist and the Bab in relation to John the Baptist and the Christ, the Bab and Baha'u'llah, is that Baha'u'llah and the Bab are twin manifestations of God. The light shining from John the Baptist doesn't join the light of Christ and reign over the Christian dispensation. But in this dispensation, we have two independent sources of divine light. In a sense, it's like some of the planetary systems have two stars at the center of them, two independent sources of light, one revolving around the other that shines on the planetary life of that solar system. That's Baha'u'llah, of course, affirms this and talks about the Bab being his own previous manifestation. It's the continuity of the two of them. Independent sources of light that are shining on the institutions of our faith. Quite interesting that in the Will and Testament of Abdu'l-Bahá, Abdu'l-Bahá stresses that the light of the Bab and the light of Baha'u'llah, two independent sources of light, are shining on the guardian of the faith. And then in a separate line, he doesn't say on the guardian and the house of justice as if that was always going to be together. He says, shining on the guardian of the faith, protecting him. And then it talks about how they are not, and shining on the house of justice. So we have this confirmation. We've got like plan A from Baha'u'llah. He says the house of justice will come into being. Abdu'l-Bahá finds, this is some of my own speculations, forgive me, that the covenant breaking that took place delayed the growth and of the cause on the one hand, and Abdu'l-Bahá said the other thing was the Baha'is didn't live the life sufficiently or it would have spread all over the world. Even in Baha'u'llah's lifetime, he said it would have spread all over the world if the Baha'is had obeyed. So the cause was not developed to the point where we could have the House of Justice after Baha'u'llah. And Shoghi Effendi is introduced as the guardian of the faith. He extends the, if you will, that authority for interpretation that flowed from Abdu'l-Bahá, extends it for another 36 years and moves us along through stages of the divine plan and brings us to the point where he could elect the House of Justice. He considered, just after he was being appointed guardian, he considered, is it time to form the House of Justice? He thought maybe he gathered some of the outstanding Baha'is and talked to them, and he realized that there wasn't the level of maturity nor the expansion of the faith sufficient to create the House of Justice at that time. So now we're back to plan A. We have the House of Justice. We don't have the guardian. We have the guardianship, but we don't have a living guardian present in the House of Justice. But this conforms to the promises of Baha'u'llah, how he will guide the House of Justice and how they will be blessed. Now, returning to this theme of the Bab, what the role of the Bab is, have you asked yourself the question, what do I say first about the Bab? If somebody asks me, oh, the bicentennial of the Bab, who's the Bab? There was a lady came to a meeting in the United States in one of the gatherings, and she was happy to say she'd been in Haifa. And she wanted to be polite, so she said, I visited the shrine of Robert. Returning again now to the question of the significance of the mission of the Bab. You remember yesterday we saw these affirmations of, on the one hand, he's the herald of one greater than himself, and on the other hand, he's an independent manifestation of God. And the distinction that Shoghi Effendi makes there is how great it is that a full manifestation of God, the promised one of all the previous prophets and messengers of the past, acts as a herald for Baha'u'llah and then accompanies him. And he uses the words himself, Shoghi Effendi says, allied though subordinate in rank. The Bab is allied with Baha'u'llah, though subordinate in rank. He's submissive. He says, one verse of Baha'u'llah is better than reading my whole revelation. If we could understand the one verse of Baha'u'llah, I think. So, in review of this, there's a paragraph from God Passes By that I want to read you, which is the summary of everything that we looked at yesterday. We'll bring some of you that who weren't here up to the point where we are evolving this presentation. Shoghi Effendi writes, the Bab, acclaimed by Baha'u'llah as the essence of essences, the sea of seas, the point round whom the realities of the prophets and messengers revolve, from whom God hath caused to proceed the knowledge of all that was and shall be, whose rank excelleth that of all the prophets, and whose revelation transcendeth the comprehension and understanding of all their chosen ones, had delivered his message and discharged his mission. He who was, this is after the martyrdom of the Bab, he who was, in the words of Abdu'l-Bahá, the morn of truth and harbinger of the most great light, whose advent at once signalized the termination of the prophetic cycle and the inception of the cycle of fulfillment, had simultaneously, through his revelation, banished the shades of night that had descended upon his country and proclaimed the impending rise of that incomparable orb whose radiance was to envelop the whole of mankind. He has affirmed by himself the primal point from which have been generated all created things, one of the sustaining pillars of the primal word of God, the mystic fane, the great announcement, the flame of that supernal light that glowed upon Sinai, the remembrance of God, concerning whom a separate covenant hath been established with each and every prophet, had through his advent at once fulfilled the promise of all ages and ushered in the consummation of all revelations. He, the Qayyim, he who ariseth, promised to the Shias, the Mehdi, one who is guided, awaited by the Sunnis, the return of John the Baptist, expected by the Christians, the Ushidar Ma, referred to in the Zoroastrian scriptures, and the return of Elijah, anticipated by the Jews, whose revelation was to show forth the signs and tokens of all the prophets, who was to manifest the perfection of Moses, the radiance of Jesus, and the patience of Job, had appeared, proclaimed his cause, been mercilessly persecuted, and died gloriously. This is the consummation of all the Shoghi Effendi writes. He puts this at the end of the chapter about the martyrdom of the Bab, which it gives us a terrific summary. Apart from the historic relationship of the Bab to past dispensations and so on, how do we conceive the person of the Bab? Because no doubt we form some image of him in our minds and our thoughts when we read the episodes of the Dawnbreakers, when we talk about the different periods of his ministry, when we hear how he revealed so rapidly in the presence of some of the most learned of the kingdom that he appeared in. And I would say we'd be stumped, you know. We'd say, you tell me, what was the Bab like from what you understand? Fortunately, we have this eye of the sign of God on earth. He looks at it all and he tells us outstanding qualities. He enumerates some characteristics about the person of the Bab. And he does it in two places in his writings. One in the dispensation of Baha'u'llah, and again in the foreword to God Passes By. I'm going to read those to us and see how that one phrase after the other gradually builds up an image. And very useful if we go and look at those things and try to remember them, because it gives us some way to articulate the feelings we may have about the Bab, or how would we represent the Bab in a conversation, or perhaps in the presentation that one or others of us may be making on the occasion of the meetings that we'll be gathering with friends and non-Baha'is about it. So first we have the description from the dispensation of Baha'u'llah. This comes right up at the beginning of this majestic letter that's in the World Order Letters of Baha'u'llah, the message entitled The Dispensation of Baha'u'llah. First, Shoghi Effendi talks about the dawning of this supreme theophany, the appearance of God to man, that is the coming of the Bab and Baha'u'llah. Then he describes and characterizes in this same way Baha'u'llah, which is something you perhaps are familiar with. And if you aren't, I hope you'll go and look at that, because it also gives you a way to describe the person of Baha'u'llah. He writes, and this is where this allied, though subordinate in rank, appears. Allied, though subordinate in rank, referring to the Bab, and invested with the authority of presiding with him over the destinies of this supreme dispensation. There shines upon this mental picture the youthful glory of the Bab. First characteristic. Infinite in his tenderness, irresistible in his charm, unsurpassed in his heroism, matchless in the dramatic circumstances of his short yet eventful life. I think, friends, you could organize Baha'i, the history, the Babi history, under these suggested characteristics of the Bab. Each one you meditate about, say, how is Shoghi Effendi, where did he derive that from? Youthful glory. Where was the tenderness of the Bab expressed? Do you remember the prayer he gives to his wife when he leaves her? Suggests she, anytime she says that, she'll be with him. Irresistible in his charm. Various episodes you can come up with, especially reading the history of the Bab. By the way, you know, the history of the Bab, where can we find this? Prime source, of course, is the Nabil's narrative. Beyond that, we have this wonderful summary of In God Passes By. Beyond that, we have Balyuzi, Hasan Balyuzi, The Hand of the Cause, and Afnan himself, who has penned a book called The Bab. That has a lot of additional documents and things that were too not known, mostly from the West, that he adds into this thing. Creates a much expanded portrait of certain aspects of the Bab's ministry. So you want to, if you haven't read that book, you want to go back to it. Maybe you would say, well, I've read the Dornberger, so I don't need to read Balyuzi. But no, Balyuzi is a terrific review of certain aspects that you don't see other places. Now, having done that, he returns to the theme again when he writes God Passes By, 10 years later. And what does he say this time? He says, the first period, and he's describing the four periods in which he's divided the first Baha'i century. The first period, 1844 to 1853, centers around the gentle, the youthful, and irresistible person of the Bab. Matchless in his meekness, imperturbable in his serenity, magnetic in his utterance, unrivaled in the dramatic episodes of his swift and tragic ministry. So, friends, I think there we have, you know, the basis for a verbal portrait, if you will, of the Bab and of his person and of his character that we can't find anywhere else. And if we can absorb some of those characteristics that the Guardian has mentioned, we'll be on fairly firm ground to give a response to what was the Bab like, or what can you tell us about the Bab? Of course, we can always tell the people, well, you can find all that in that book and this other book, but that's not very uplifting at the moment of the conversation, you know? We had outlined at the beginning certain aspects we were going to examine. We had the mission of the Bab, we had his declaration, the rank and station, we had his titles, we just did his person. Now we're going to look at his ministry. And I'd made a contrast. I said the mission is what his role, what he wanted to accomplish, or what his position was. The ministry is how it unfolded, the episodes and all the different events that took place. We'll return again to these two statements that I mentioned yesterday, summaries that Shoghi Effendi made for non-Baha'is, because it's where he reduces the whole thing to the shortest presentation. In the statement he made in 1947, he summarizes the ministry of the Bab in the following way. This is helpful because we want to repeat that perhaps in our meetings. We want to talk a little bit about the ministry of Baha'u'llah, and we think to ourselves, we're overwhelmed by the whole Dornbergers. What can we possibly say? Here's the way this eye of God, this sign of God on earth, has summarized it for us. Swift and severe persecution launched by the organized forces of church and state in his native land precipitated successively his arrest, his exile to the mountains of Azerbaijan, his imprisonment in the fortresses of Maku and Sharik, and his execution in July 1850 by a firing squad in the public square of Tabriz. Encompasses the whole of the ministry of the Bab. In the foreword to God Passes By, again, he's outlines the same short picture, you will, of the whole of the ministry of the Bab. This is what he says. It begins with the declaration of his mission, culminates in his martyrdom, and ends in a veritable orgy of religious massacre, revolting in its hideousness. It's characterized by 9 years of fierce and relentless contest, whose theater was the whole of Persia, in which above 10,000 heroes laid down their lives, in which two sovereigns of the Qajar dynasty and their wicked ministers participated, and which was supported by the entire Shia ecclesiastical hierarchy, by the military resources of the state, and by the implacable hostility of the masses. You can find that in the foreword to God Passes By. Expanding a bit on that in the same period, in the work which has become known as The Promised Day Is Come, A Letter of Shoghi Effendi to the West, he also reviews the lives of the central figures, and he sets forth the progressive stages in the ministry of the Bab. He titles this way. And these are the points that he makes there. And of course, this is a bit expanded over what's in the foreword. Now, this is an earlier, larger picture. You will recognize a number of these episodes. Some you may, some you may not. The Bab, the point, as affirmed by Baha'u'llah, around whom the realities of the prophets and messengers revolve, was the one first swept into the maelstrom which engulfed his supporters. Sudden arrest and confinement in the very first year of his short and spectacular career. Public affront deliberately inflicted in the presence of the ecclesiastical dignitaries of Shiraz. Prolonged incarceration in the bleak fastnesses of the mountains of Azerbaijan. I stopped there to say I had the bounty of visiting Maku in 1973. Amazing mountain. This huge mountain comes out, it kind of comes out from the base and moves forward and up. So when you're standing at the fortress itself, the mountain overshadows you. And up at the top are some birds flying around, and while you're standing there, pebbles are falling off that mountain onto your head. Little pebbles here, little pebble there. A very bleak place, set up above the town of Maku. Looks out over the town. And it was a fortress. By the way, the government is renovating as a historical site now. Quite interesting. They removed part of it after I was there. The government, because they found people were making visits to this portion of the fortress where the Bab had been incarcerated, they built a mosque there to obliterate the history of the Bab. No, now it's become the Mosque of the Miracles, where you go there and you can have an answer to your prayers. And people, of course, are thinking this is connected with the Bab who was here. Quite a kind of backfired on them. Moving on with the explanation, bleak fastnesses of the mountains of Azerbaijan, not only in Maku itself, but in Çerik, when he went to Çerik, and I actually had the good fortune to get to all the way to Cherik. I happened to be with Masu Kamsi, who the Guardian has said you should visit Cherik. So he was a counselor in South America at the same time I was, and we were both in Iran at that time, and he said, come, we're going to go to Cherik. And we marched up in the rain up the... There's no road to go up there. You walk or ride a horse. But we walked to the base of the... of what was the fortress of Cherik. It's all destroyed now. It's all crumbled down. There are few earlier photographs that show the extent of it. It's like a little settlement. And all the people of the areas were coming and constantly wanting to attain the presence of the Bab and hear his teachings. As far as the Prime Minister had hoped that he would silence the Bab by sending him off to these remote areas, of course that didn't happen. And the rumors and the stories would descend from there and spread all over the country. A contemptuous disregard and cowardly jealousy evinced respectively by the chief magistrate of the realm, that would be the Shah, and the foremost minister of his government, which would be the Amir Nizam. The carefully staged and farcical interrogatory sustained in the presence of the heir to the throne and the distinguished divines of Tabriz. And here's something interesting, friends, that if you haven't caught up with it, the prince that was the governor of Tabriz at the time of the interview of the Bab, where they challenged him and where he made this proclamation that I am the promised Qayyim, that was the future Nasruddin Shah. Nasruddin Shah Mirza at that time, 17, 18 year old boy, he witnessed the declaration of the Bab on that event and went on for his ministry. And the friends asked the Guardian, they asked Abdu'l-Bah too, and the Guardian said Abdu'l-Bah had said that he was, why was his ministry extended 50 years? Everybody else that messed with the Bab disappeared in a year or two of a plague or something brought them down. But no, the Shah went on till his jubilee, 50th anniversary, where he was shot on his jubilee. Mr. Linga said, when I was with Shoghi Effendi, he talked about this, and he said, and then when the Shah was shot, he said, he went straight to hell. No judgment, just straight, you know, okay. And he said, and he's still there. When I was in the Holy Land, Riyak Anum said the Guardian was commenting on the death of Muhammad Ali, and Muhammad Ali went to hell. He said, we had some trouble with Nasruddin Shah. He was saying, where am I to go? Where am I to go? You expect me to live with this Muhammad Ali here in hell? No. What a picture. I know some of you don't believe in hell, but you better get your facts straight, because as far as I can see in the writings, it's quite a real place. Although some of the people that are in it think they're in their glory, and they can't see the truth of anything, so it's very confusing. So just to remember that the Shah had his full chance to see the radiance of the Bab in that exalted moment when he declared that he was the promised one. It had such a potency that, as described in the Dawnbreakers, you know, no one could move. They all were stunned by this thing. This fellow is supposed to be their prisoner. They're supposed to be roughing him up. He makes his proclamation then, and he walks out of the gathering. Didn't allow them to go on with their intention. It was pretty hard to find who was going to beat the feet of the Bab with the bastinado. You know, this is Sheikh al-Islam, this outstanding cleric, took it upon himself to beat raw the feet of the Bab. Can you imagine? I don't know where he is, but he probably has his special berth somewhere too. That's the next thing he mentions here. He says, the shameful infliction of the bastinado in the prayer house and at the hands of the Sheikh al-Islam of that city, the outstanding Muslim cleric. What kind of vision did he have that he beat up the supreme manifestation of God? And finally, suspension in the barrack square of Tabriz and the discharge of a volley of above 700 bullets at his youthful breast under the eyes of a callous multitude of about 10,000 people, culminating in the ignominious exposure of his mangled remains on the edge of the moat without the city gate. These were the progressive stages in the tumultuous and tragic ministry of one whose age inaugurated the consummation of all ages and whose revelation fulfilled the promise of all revelations. He continues, I swear by God, the Bab himself in his tablet to Muhammad Shah has written, shouldst thou know the things which in the space of these 4 years have befallen me at the hands of thy people and thine army, thou wouldst hold thy breath from fear of God. Alas, alas, for the things which have touched me. I swear by the most great Lord, wert thou to be told in what place I dwell, the first person to have mercy on me would be thyself. In the heart of a mountain is a fortress, the inmates of which are confined to 2 guards and 4 dogs. Picture then my plight. In this mountain I have remained alone and have come to such a pass that none of those gone before me have suffered what I've suffered, nor any transgressor endured what I've endured. His ministry. How do we get a bigger picture? How do we find an outline, if you will, of the ministry of the Bab? Now, Shoghi Effendi has provided this too, because he has written these 5 chapters of God Passes By, and then he's created a table of contents, and he himself has enumerated the sub-points there. They don't appear in the text, but they are in the contents, and I've seen the letters where he himself had composed this. It's not the editor's. And this, friends, gives us an overview. It's not too lengthy, and I want to read it for you. It'll just remind us of the various episodes and stages in the unfoldment of the Bab's ministry. So the first chapter is called The Birth of the Babi Revelation. The declaration of the Bab's mission, he starts right off with that. Enrollment of the Letters of the Living. The Bab's pilgrimage to Mecca. The Bab's arrest and departure for Isfahan after his return from Mecca. The Bab's sojourn in Isfahan with all of the interesting developments that took place there. The second chapter is the Bab's captivity in Azerbaijan. The significance of his captivity. His incarceration in Maku and Shehrik. His examination in Tabriz, his writings, his covenant, and finally the conference of Badasht. Then there's a chapter on the upheavals in Mazandaran, Nehriz, and Zanjan, features and episodes of which are reviewed there. You know, they're also covered in some great detail in Nabil's narrative. And you had the great heroes of the faith like Vahid and Zanjan and Hojat, and then Tahiri herself, and the 7 martyrs of Tehran is described there. Then he moves on to the 4th chapter, which is the execution of the Bab. And he outlines the events preceding his death, certain things that led up to that. And then the circumstances attending his martyrdom. Then tributes paid to his memory, both East and West. There were eyewitnesses, I mean, European representatives of governments that were present and saw the miracle of the Bab being shot by 750 bullets and just not being touched at all, nor his companion. How does one explain this? They didn't know how to explain it. They reported it, but they didn't know how to explain what had happened. Finally, he talks about the parallel between his mission, of the Bob's mission, and that of Jesus Christ himself. We'll come back to that again. The significance then of the Bob's mission, and this is the thing I read at the beginning of the session this morning. The fifth chapter of the Bobby period, the first of these four periods that the Guardian describes in God Passes By, is the attempt on the life of the Shah and the consequences that brought, and then of course the arrest of Baha'u'llah and his imprisonment in the Syed Chawl. And then you find further details about the martyrdom of Tahereh and the execution of the prominent disciples of the Bab. Tributes paid in books, east and west, of the heroism of the early Babis. And finally, Shoghi Effendi makes a resume of the fate of the persecutors of the Bab. Those that persecuted the Bab and his disciples, what happened to them? That's quite a dramatic close to this whole review that Shoghi Effendi offers us of the. So ask yourself, how recently have I read God Passes By? I won't ask for a show of hands, I don't want to. That brings us now to this a little more detail. You know, you remember the episodes of the Shoghi Effendi points out particularly the two episodes preceding the martyrdom of the Bab. The one where the official comes and says, come with me immediately, and the Bab says, I'm not finished with my conversation, and he says, nothing in earth or in heaven can possibly interrupt me until I finish. And this man takes the Bab away for the execution. And of course, then he finds him afterwards seated, and he turns to him after a moment of consternation that the man is seeing that how is he alive after all this, and inside the room again where with the secretary again finishing his conversation. I said, I've finished my conversation and now you may proceed with your intention. My God. That's one episode he mentions. The other was Issam Khan, the head of the Christian regiment that originally provided the 750 soldiers to shoot at the Bab. Who shoots at any? Can you think of any execution in history where 750 riflemen were lined up to be sure that deed was accomplished? I mean, that's already incredible in history. Maybe 10 or 12 marksmen or something. 750? Incredible. Then he says, Sam Khan saw, he said that he didn't want to do this. He told the Bab, I have no enmity for you at all. And the Bab tells him, if you are sincere in your declaration, God is able to resolve this. And you should proceed. And he proceeds and he shoots. And of course, the Bab is not. So he renounces. He takes his troops. He said, the men are not going to repeat this. This is sufficient evidence for me. And he disappears. And the official said, I'm not going to be involved in this any further to try to kill the Bab. And he quit his post. He said, even though it results in my own death, I'm not going to take one step forward in this again. Very interesting. Again, these as a kind of evidence of what was happening at this moment. Never mind the fact that there was this terrific storm and darkness that overcome everybody. It's like a movie. Dramatic movie has been repeated, this kind of thing. Amazing. So after outlining the execution of the Bab, Shoghi Effendi draws this parallel with the ministry of the Christ. And out of all the history of the different prophets, he chooses that one because he said it's so parallel and similar in character. And he outlines the various aspects which he sees as coinciding. It would indeed be no exaggeration to say that nowhere in the whole compass of the world's religious literature, except in the Gospels, do we find any record relating to the death of the religion founders of the past comparable to the martyrdom suffered by the prophet of Shiraz. Well, think about it. We don't have much about that. Muhammad died in his home. Moses, I don't know what the... I can't remember the end of the history of Moses, but we don't have any spectacular details. So strange, so inexplicable a phenomena, attested by eyewitnesses, corroborated by men of recognized standing, and acknowledged by government as well as unofficial historians among the people who had sworn undying hostility to the Babi faith, may be truly regarded as the most marvelous manifestation of the unique potentialities with which a dispensation promised by all the dispensations of the past had been endowed. This event of the martyrdom of the Bab that his enemies had to admit to, this miraculous end to this spectacular divine career. The passion of Jesus Christ, and indeed his whole public ministry, alone offer a parallel to the mission and death of the Bab. A parallel which no student of comparative religion can fail to perceive or ignore. In the youthfulness and meekness of the inaugurator of the Babi dispensation, in the extreme brevity and turbulence of his public ministry, in the dramatic swiftness with which that ministry moved towards its climax, in the apostolic order which he instituted and the primacy which he conferred on one of its members. You're following these things. Now, Christ indicating that Peter was the outstanding disciple, and the Bab also his indications about Qudus and so on. In the boldness of his challenge to the time-honored conventions, rites, and laws which had been woven into the fabric of the religion he himself had been born into. Friends, too much to take notes, but this is all right there in God Passes By. You can go back and take it apart and think about it and read the parallel passages in the Gospel and see what this is all about. In the role which an officially recognized and firmly entrenched religious hierarchy played as chief instigator of the outrages which he was made to suffer, the same as the Christ. In the indignities heaped upon him, in the suddenness of his arrest, in the interrogation to which he was subjected. Very interesting how similar this is. In the derision poured and the scourging inflicted upon him. In the public affront he sustained. And finally, in his ignominious suspension before the gaze of a hostile multitude. The crucifixion of the Christ and the suspension of the Bab at the time of his execution. In all these, we cannot fail to discern a remarkable similarity to the distinguishing features of the career of Jesus Christ. Chapter 4 of God Passes By, you can find the details. How are we doing with time here? All right. We have the bounty of having Dr. Saidi here with us to talk about the writings of the Bab. I have a section here about the writings of the Bab, but some of which has come from him that I've heard. When he was first invited to the Holy Land, I was involved in liaison capacity in various ways, and he discovered the treasures. We knew there were the writings of the Bab, but we didn't have them cataloged. And Dr. Saidi undertook the catalog of all of these various papers, Babi records, Babi manuscripts. And he was alive with discovering things that nobody knew anything about. He would come and communicate them, and the House of Justice, he reported to the House of Justice various things, various clarifications. It was so exciting. So I would say about anything I say with my ideas, you want to see if you can confirm them in the Baha'i writings. And I usually say anybody that you hear speak, you want to reserve and think, now, is this what I've read in the writings? Does this coincide with what the teachings say? I don't care who it is. You've got to go all the way to the top, except the guardian. You're going to have to ask yourself, is this right? Is this in accord with what I understand? But Dr. Saidi, we have to listen to with a carte blanche, because he's exploring new territories that haven't been written down yet. And in the process, we get an inspiration. And now the many of the passages which he's referred to and discovered then and so on have been incorporated in his book, The Gate of the Heart. And those passages have all been through scrutiny. The texts, some 100 texts from the Bab, are in that book that you won't find anywhere else, that have been approved by the House of Justice for publication. So it's quite an amplification, if you will. And I think he's going to lead us into a greater understanding, obviously, of these things. There's a whole variety of themes, and he'll be approaching these, but one of them has to do with the five modes of revelation. The Bab talks about this a lot, and it comes into his writings that there were five ways, he said, in which he revealed his revelation. And these modes are, the first one, he said, is first mode, and these four are from Islam, confirmed in Islam, and then he adds a fifth one. The four from Islam were divine verses, that is the word of God, if you will, in the first person from God, where the manifestation channels the words of God and he announces things on behalf of the divinity. Divine verses, wholly inspired, characterized by the term, by the phrase, I am God. That's the character of the first mode. The second mode of revelation, he says, are supplications and prayers in which the manifestation of God models for us what our attitude towards his inner state should be, towards his inner reality. And he assumes an attitude that's humble, that points to God. And it's characterized by the phrase, Thou art God. I am God, now thou art God. Then the third category of mode of revelation are commentaries about the first stage, where the manifestation elaborates on the meanings of the divine verses that he's revealed. And those are characterized by the term, He is God. So we have, I am God, thou art God, now he is God. Commentaries. And then there's scientific treatises and other writings of the manifestation, which are in a fourth category, which he describes with an incomplete phrase, He is God who does such and such, and an elaboration of that sort. Then the Bab says there's a fifth mode of revelation, and that is all of these four, which were in Arabic, in Persian. And he also says, because of the character of his coming, the greatness of the day of God that he appears in, that instead of only the divine verses being the verses of God, he said everything that's written in any of the five modes is considered revelation, divine revelation itself. Now we were talking about the summary of the Bab, the writings of the Bab digitally, what we had available there, and there's still more things that will come and be discovered in the future, but digitally we were able to calculate the Bab's writings as 5 million words. And again, as pointed out, this is surpasses the summary of all the previous manifestations of God, again, probably double that. Then we say, well, what is left for Baha'u'llah? Actually, the digitation of the Baha'u'llah's words came up to 6 million. Amazing. This is just so such an outpouring of revelation, the like of which we've never seen in prophetic history. Now, some of you may react inside. You say, you know, I've seen in the writings that we're not supposed to make any distinction between the manifestations of God. All of them are the messengers of God. Yes, friends, this is true, but we have to bear in mind the Egon defines the twofold character of the manifestations of God. On one hand, their inner reality is one light. It's the emanation of the light of God. It's the brilliance that makes them aware of everything below them, the whole of creation. And in that, they're all the same. But the designation of their missions, the extent to which they're allowed to reveal what they reveal, the limitations on its content, this is what makes them distinct from each other. And in that, we see the Bab arise as the king of the messengers of God. So it's not really a contradiction. And interesting to think about what Baha'u'llah says about the manifestations of God in the Egon. There's two passages particularly that I think we should bear in mind, because we see ourselves as independent and separate in creation. We somehow are independent units, but we're all sustained inwardly by the manifestation of God. All things, Baha'u'llah writes, all things derive their being from the manifestation of God. All things live, move, and have their being in the manifestation of God. And in Paris Talks, Abdu'l-Bahá confirms that the power of thought comes from the Holy Spirit. If it were not for the emanation of God, we would not be sustained in our possibility of thinking and discursive thought or anything. You know, in a letter, in this regard, in a letter about dreams, Shoghi Effendi confirms that anybody that knows history realizes that we can be guided in dreams. But he warns, he said, one has to be very cautious about the inspiration that we receive in dreams, because of the dual character of human nature. Our lower aspect takes the guidance that God is sending us, that the manifestations shining into our being in the form of dreams, and it distorts and warps them if we have prejudices and dislikes and hatreds of other people and all the things that we're, human nature is subject to. So he said, by the time you finish interpreting through your strange character, you change the guidance that's coming in the dream. So Shoghi Effendi says that's why it is necessary to compare the contents of your dreams with the revealed verses. If it corresponds with the teachings of the faith, okay, maybe you can trust it more. And he says, indeed, that this inspiration, the light of the guidance of God, through the soul being purified and sanctified from these limitations that we're, of course, constantly praying that God assist us to be cleansed and to become pure mirrors. He said that light of God operates not just in dreams, but it operates in wakeful hours as well. That there are souls who are feeling this divine confirmation and sharing it with others, and that's the goal that we're all aiming at. Live, move, and have our being in the manifestation of God. Another example that the master gives, he says that in the human body, this soul reigns supreme. Now, our soul has an unconscious part, an autonomic part, And that's the part filled with all the intelligence of the divinity to run all the systems of our body and to maintain its health, besides providing us with consciousness and awareness. This thing knows, so it communicates to you. You feel anywhere in your body, you feel sensation. You know the state of your body. If something's out of whack, you feel it immediately. I don't feel good, or my head is, or I'm dizzy, or whatever it is. He said that the manifestation of God, that the human soul, the human realities, are like the cells in another body, a large body, of which he's the soul. He's the most great commander. And that's why the manifestation, who has us as his body, that is his outreach, his consciousness, is aware of every soul. How is it you in your room wake up and you pray to Baha'u'llah and you feel good, and the other person on the other side of the world is doing the same thing, you know? We didn't have to line up to wait for a turn. It's all happening simultaneously. This is a kind of a level of consciousness that we have no way to imagine, except that he talks about it to us. He's simultaneously present and closer than your life vein at any instant in your life. And if you feel far from him, it's not that he moved, you moved. How do you come back to that closeness? Bill Sears used to always say that. If you don't feel as close to God as you used to be, who moved? God didn't go anywhere. Baha'u'llah didn't go anywhere. That's a constant. And it's not only a constant, but it's the sustenance of your power to breathe. It's providing the saliva in your mouth. It's digesting your breakfast, which you don't know how to do by yourself. Who knows those things? How to, you know, he wonders in some of the tablets how human beings, in the face of so many signs of a superior intelligence, have the gall to deny God and act as if they were something independent. Where were they 80 years, 90 years ago? And where will they be in another 90 years? Come and go, we come and go. I used to think of Mbaji walking amongst those olive trees that have been there since, some of them, Shoghi Effendi said, since the time of Christ. We must seem like mosquitoes coming and going. We're born, buzz around a little bit, and we're off. And it really doesn't matter what we believe or don't believe as far as those olives are concerned. They just go on existing. Fascinating. As far as the best known works of the Bab, we have a list of them in the Baha'i World volumes that Shoghi Effendi created, where he's made a summary of the best known works of Baha'u'llah, the best known works of the Bab, and there's a list of the best known works of Abdul Baha that's been added there and appears in these large Baha'i World volumes. Most of you are familiar with, I think. How does the Guardian summarize? How does he get into this whole question of his writings, the details of which, again, Dr. Saidi are beginning to introduce to us? Alike in the magnitude of the writings emanating from his pen and in the diversity of the subjects treated in those writings, his revelation stands wholly unparalleled in the annals of any previous religion. What a statement. He himself affirms, while confined in Maku, that up to that time, his writings embracing highly diversified subjects had amounted to more than 500,000 verses. The verses which have rained from this cloud of divine mercy, as Baha'u'llah's testimony in the Kitab-e-Ighan, have been so abundant that none hath yet been able to estimate their number. A score of volumes are now available. How many still remain beyond our reach? How many have been plundered and have fallen into the hands of the enemy, the fate of which none knoweth? No less arresting is the variety of themes presented by these voluminous writings, such as prayers, homilies, orations, tablets of visitation, scientific treatises, doctrinal dissertations, exhortations, commentaries on the Quran and on various traditions, epistles to the highest religious and ecclesiastical dignitaries of the realm, and laws and ordinances for the consolidation of its faith and the direction of its activities. In the course of summary, something that we may visit again in the other course that's being offered, it should be noted, Shoghi Effendi says, in connection with his review of the contents of the Persian Bayan, it should be noted in this connection, and in the third head of this book, there occurs a passage which, alike in its explicit reference to the name of the Promised One and in its anticipation of the order which in a later age was to be identified with his revelation, deserves to rank as one of the most significant statements recorded in any of the writings of the Bab. Then he quotes from the Bayan. Well is it with him, is his prophetic announcement, who fixeth his gaze upon the order of Baha'u'llah and rendereth thanks unto his Lord, for he will assuredly be made manifest. God hath indeed irrevocably ordained it in the Bayan. Then Shoghi Effendi elaborates this theme. He says, it is with that selfsame order that the founder of the promised revelation, 20 years later, incorporating that same term in his Kitab-i Aqdas, identified the system envisaged in that book, affirming that this most great order had deranged the world's equilibrium and revolutionized mankind's ordered life. It is the features of that selfsame order which at a later stage in the evolution of the faith, the center of Baha'u'llah's covenant, and the appointed interpreter of his teachings delineated through the provisions of his will and testament. It's the structural basis of that selfsame order which in the formative age of that same faith, the stewards of that same covenant, the elected representatives of the worldwide Baha'i community are now laboriously and unitedly establishing. It is the superstructure of that selfsame order attaining its full stature through the emergence of the Baha'i World Commonwealth, the Kingdom of God on Earth, which the golden age of that same dispensation must, in the fullness of time, ultimately witness. How the Guardian draws this significance of that phrase from the Bayan all the way to the golden age and the establishment of the Kingdom of God on Earth. Friends, that brings us to the close of this session. We'll continue with this tomorrow. Thank you.